20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox presents a CinemaScope picture. Van Johnson, Vera Miles in 23 Paces to Baker Street. Also starring Cecil Parker, with Patricia Laffin, Morris Denham, Estelle Winwood, Liam Redmond, Isabel Elsom, Martin Benson, Natalie Norwick, Terence DeMarnay. Screenplay by Nigel Balchin, based on a novel by Philip MacDonald. Big Ben stands silhouetted against a dark blue sky, surrounded by scaffolding. Its clock faces glow from inside. Produced by Henry Ephron, directed by Henry Hathaway. London and the River Thames stretches out under an amber sky. Cars pass over a bridge and steamboats towing long barges chug along the river slowly. A steam train makes its way over another bridge further along the Thames. The sweeping view of the city comes from the balcony of a smart flat overlooking the river. The balcony doors are open, and a long curtain inside wafts gently on the breeze.
Sorry. What have you got to be sorry about? You didn't make the world, and neither did I. And if we had, I'm not so sure we would have made it any different. Correction. Drop that whole speech. Substitute, sorry. What is there to be sorry about? We didn't make the world. And if we had, what a mess we would have made of it, being what we are.
Wearing a burgundy jacket and sitting in a black leather armchair, Philip Hannon is recording himself on a large tape recorder. He rewinds the tape and plays it back.
Sorry. What is there to be sorry about? We didn't make the world. And if we had, what a mess we would have made of it, being what we are.
The tape stops. Looking troubled, Phil presses a buzzer, summoning an older, suited man.
Oh, Bob, I've been redoing that speech at the end of Act Two. Type it up and send it to the theater.
That'll mean Pierce learning some new lines.
I never learned the old lines, though some new ones don't make any difference. Most of the time, opening night, I thought he was in some other play, and I wished I was in some other theater.
Well, that's no business of mine, but you've got a play that's a smash hit in New York, and looks like being one here, why not leave it alone?
What do you suggest I do instead? Take a walk around the National Gallery, or sit here and rot? Or maybe go back to New York and rot? Get it over to the theater right away.
As Phil doesn't seem inclined to get the door, Bob does so. He leaves the room, walks through the elegant apartment, and answers the door to an attractive young woman with strawberry blonde hair.
Oh, good afternoon. Is this Mr. Hannon's apartment?
That's right.
Well, I wonder if I might see him. Would you please tell him Jean Lennox is here?
Is he expecting you?
No.
Excuse me, but are you a friend of Mr. Hannon's?
Well, I think of myself as one.
Oh, why don't you wait inside?
Thank you.
She steps in, and Bob closes the door.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Phil's now standing, holding his cane.
Ask Miss Lennox to come in.
Will you come in, please, Miss Lennox?
She smiles as she walks into the room, then looks a little nervous.
Hello, Phil.
Hello, Jean. What are you doing in London?
Oh, just a vacation. I wanted to drop in and say hello. And congratulate you on getting such wonderful notices.
You came 3,000 miles for that.
No, of course not. Phil, why didn't you let me know when you were leaving New York?
You know the answer to that.
Johnny and Pat are in London. Have you called them?
I haven't called anybody. I've been busy working.
Phil, I don't see why you insist on acting this way.
Jean, we've been all over this a dozen times. When a thing is finished, I like to forget about it. Let's talk about something else, shall we? You like the apartment?
It's lovely.
Come and look at this beautiful view.
She follows him out onto the balcony. He feels his way with his cane.
Houses of Parliament over there. There's Big Ben watching over us. They're doing some work on him, as you can see. In Charing Cross Station. Over there we have Waterloo Bridge and St. Paul's Cathedral. We even have some prehistoric ruins that date right back to 1941.
Don't be so bitter, Phil. It doesn't help you.
Bitter? Me? I'm a successful playwright who's just had a hit. A big hit. What have I got to be bitter about? I'm all right as long as people leave me alone.
He walks into a door.
I wish people would leave things where they're supposed to be. I have to go out now, Jean. Were you going someplace?
No. Just back to the apartment, I guess.
Oh, you've taken an apartment. Well, I must come and see your view sometime. Bob, I'm going out.
Shall I come along?
No, I'm only going to the pub.
The Eagle?
Yes.
Are you sure you don't want
to... Quite sure. Look, if you must do something, you can call a cab for Miss Lennox. And when you finish typing up that new stuff, you can pick me up with the car at the Eagle and drive me to the theater. Goodbye, Jean.
Goodbye, Phil.
Nice of you to look me up.
Phil walks out. In the hall, he pulls on a gray jacket. Bob drapes a scarf around Phil's neck and helps him into a long, dark coat. Bob hands Phil his hat, and holding his cane in his other hand, Phil strides to the front door and leaves. Standing by the lit fire, Jean looks dejected. She picks her coat up off the arm of a chair and goes into the hall, where Bob's waiting.
Do you want a cab, Miss Lennox?
Oh, no, thank you. I can manage. You mustn't do that, you know.
What?
Well, fuss over him like that. He'll go crazy if you do that.
I don't like him to go out alone.
I know, but he must if he thinks he can. Where is this bar?
It's two streets down. Across the road.
Across the road?
Yeah. You can see it from here.
Jean moves curtains aside and looks out through a window with Bob at a large and busy junction. She turns from the window gloomily.
Allow me, please.
Oh, thank you.
Bob helps her into her pale coat.
Have you worked for him long?
Only since he came over here the last time. Nearly 2 months.
Is he drinking?
Well, not exactly drinking, but not exactly not. Have you known him a long time, Miss Lennox?
Well, yes, I was his secretary for 3 years in New York and here, wherever he wanted to go. We were engaged to be married. And then it happened. He didn't like having me around. So I was fired.
I'm sorry.
She picks up her gloves from a small round table, and Bob shows her to the door. Phil arrives at the pub on a wet street corner and goes inside. Feeling the way in front of him with his cane, he walks round the bar and takes a seat by the door to the ladies' bar. He takes off his hat and scarf. As he straightens his coat and tie, the barmaid comes over.
What What's it to be this evening, dear?
Scotch, please, double.
Soda or water?
Neither, straight.
You're an American, aren't you?
Yes.
Then you'd like a bit of ice in it, eh?
No, thanks. I've learned to like it your way.
His smile fades, and he moves his cane to the edge of the table. Phil takes out a pocket watch. At the same moment, bells ring loudly from a pinball machine, drowning out his watch's chimes. He looks frustrated and clicks his watch again once it's quiet. He puts his watch away, and the barmaid brings his drink.
Here we are, then.
Thanks.
What makes you so tired, dear?
It'd be a long, dreary story, and one I'm sure you've heard many times before.
But not from a young fella like you.
Will that do?
That'll do fine. Thank you.
His drinks arrived in two small glasses. He sips from the first wearily, then leans back, with his head near the frosted window to the ladies' bar.
I don't want anything to do with it, Mr. Evans. I don't like the sound of it.
You like the money, all right. A little bit more than this last job. Much more.
But how do I know what you're going to do with it?
You don't have to worry about that. You just do what I tell you and take the money and forget it.
I'll disturb you somehow when people are trusting you.
Would you like me to say a little prayer?
You promised me when I went to college. That was last thing.
This is much bigger. Come on, you're up. Mary arrives in the 10th. You go down to meet him and take over. And we take it off your hands and give you your money. What could be simpler than that?
But you don't understand. I might get to like
you
it.
You won't have time for that.
No. No, Mr. Evans, I won't do it. I won't.
Oh, listen.
Phil struggles to hear.
Just 5 minutes. So think that over.
You wouldn't do that. You wouldn't.
No. I wouldn't do that. Just as long as you do as you're told. Come on, pull yourself together. There's nothing to cry about. All right, you'll be on velvet.
All right. There's no decency left anyway. When do you want me?
Night of the 9th. Same address. Then I take you down and you start the job on the 10th.
All right. Can I go now?
What's the hurry? Have another drink.
No, I have to get back. Her ladyship's going to a concert tonight, and there'll be nobody to see to them.
I'll walk out with you. Which way do you go?
Just to the corner. 73 takes me right to the door, but they always get so full.
The two shadows on the frosted window move as the figures get up. The door to the ladies' bar next to Phil opens, and they pass through it. One of the ladies' gloves falls to the floor, and Phil sniffs as it's picked up. The pair leave.
Miss, would you come here a minute, please?
Yes, dear?
Those two people who just went out, do you know them?
Men and a girl, no, never saw them before, that I can remember.
Well, what were they like?
I don't know, dear, just a man and a girl.
Oh, were they tall or short or young or old?
Well, he was a bit taller than she was, not very tall, not very old, sort of, of medium people all round.
Were they 16 or 60?
Tell the truth, I didn't look at them particular, but I think they were, 30-ish, maybe her a bit younger.
Anything the matter, Mr.
Oh,
Hammond?
Bob, when you came in, did you see a man and woman leaving?
No. There was no one coming out just now.
Oh, miss, there must have been something about them you noticed.
Well, I think she had a blue cape and he a raincoat. Anyhow, they came right by you, dear. Much nearer you than me. You saw them, didn't you?
No, I didn't see them. I don't see things nowadays.
I'm sorry, sir. I didn't realize.
Oh, that's all right. You weren't intended to.
With a slight smile, Phil leaves with Bob. Phil records.
Both of medium height. Age probably 25 to 35. Woman thought to be wearing a blue cape. man, a raincoat. The woman used a perfume. The man breathed with a slight wheezing sound, as though having bronchial trouble. Anyway, there was something strange about his voice.
Police are coming around right away.
Okay, now be quiet. Let me finish this. The conversation went as follows. I don't want anything to do with it, Mr. Evans. I don't like the sound of it. Oh, you'll like the money, all right. And it'll be more than this last job. Much more. But how do I know what you're going to do with it?
When do you want me? 9th of the 9th. Same address. Then I take you down and you start the job on the 10th.
All right. Can I go now?
What's the hurry? Have another drink.
No, I've got to get back. Her ladyship's going to a concert and there'll be no one to see to them.
I'll walk out with you. Which way do you go?
Just to the corner. 73 takes me right to the door, but they get so full.
That's all there was. I couldn't hear anymore. Then they came out.
Well?
You done that verbatim, Mr. Hammond? That's the conversation word for word?
Yes.
You must have a remarkable memory.
Well, it's my business to remember dialogue. Well, what do you think?
Was that all there was, Mr. Hammond?
Well, isn't that enough for you? There's something evil going on, isn't there?
There might be.
What do you mean, might be?
Well, you tell us what you make of it, sir.
I figured out like this. This woman has something to do with children. Probably a nursemaid. That's why she had to get back, because somebody else is going out. So that there'd be somebody there with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
She's employed by this lordship and ladyship. And this Mr. Evans she's talking to is trying to force her to do something wrong. Whatever it is, she doesn't want to do it. But she's afraid of Evans. Scared to death of him. Because of some hole he's got over her. Now, on the 10th, she's going to meet this other girl, Mary. Get something from her and pass it to Evans. It could be that this other girl is a nursemaid, too, and that it's a plot to kidnap a child.
Wait a minute, Mr. Hammond. I know they have kidnappings in America, but they're very rare here, you know.
Okay, then maybe it's a robbery, but it's something very wrong.
Mr. Hammond, you'll forgive me for saying this, but you're a dramatist and a very skillful one. The way you've recorded that conversation is very dramatic and convincing.
I don't think Mr. Hannon's likely to give a ham performance, Inspector.
Thank you, Bob. Look, Inspector, I've only recorded it the way they said it.
Yes, but if you just take the words themselves, they could have a completely different meaning.
Such as?
Well, supposing this girl is employed, as you said, by a titled family. And supposing this man is just trying to entice her away to another job with an offer of higher money. More money than in last job.
How about hand over to us later?
It could be a temporary job. The girl Mary is leaving and they want someone to take over from her temporarily.
But she says it's dirty, letting people down who are trusting her.
Well, that could be her present employer. She might not like letting herself be enticed away for more money.
Oh, one of those old-fashioned servants we read about.
Then why did Evans threaten her?
I didn't hear that he actually did threaten her.
But isn't it quite possible that he did during that part I couldn't hear?
Quite possible.
Look, Inspector. It seems to me you not only think I'm blind, but crazy. I told you it's my business to know how people talk, what they're thinking when they say things. And I tell you that girl was scared. No one's that scared just because someone suggests changing a job.
Well, Mr. Hammond, you may very well be right. We're very obliged to you for getting in touch with us so promptly.
Well, somebody has to act promptly because whatever it is set for the 10th, which is just 1 week from today. Well, what are you going to do?
Well, we haven't got a lot to go on, Mr. Hammond, but we shall make inquiries. And if in the meantime you should recall anything further...
All I know is on that tape, and you're welcome to play it through at any time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hammond. We may take advantage of that. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Bob shows the two gentlemen out.
Straining at the leash, aren't they? Can't wait to get started.
Bob and Phil sit together on a ferry travelling along the Thames. Phil adjusts the fur collar of his coat as they pass under a bridge.
Where are we now?
Just passing under Waterloo Bridge. Festival Hall on the left.
I never saw that. After my time, what's it like?
Oh, modern.
What's that noise?
Bob looks up into the sky.
Helicopter coming into Waterloo Air Terminal.
They won't do anything.
Who?
Those policemen. They think I'm making something out of nothing.
Well, of course it's...
Sure. Nothing to go on. Possibly innocent conversation and so forth. But unless I'm going crazy, that girl was terrified. Maybe that's it. Maybe I am going crazy. Well, how does it look? Is it beautiful?
Yes. Yes, very beautiful. View, buildings.
You make it all so vivid, I can almost see it.
Phil takes out his brass pocket watch and listens to it closely.
Half past five. The sun must be just going down ahead of us. Any barges coming down?
Yes, two lots.
I know. And the river's gold now with the sun on it like that. And the barge is black against the gold. A slight wind that makes the water glitter so that it slaps and dances against the side of the boat.
Phil's expression turns serious.
Wait a minute.
What's up?
That perfume. That's it, I've got it.
Back at the apartment, Phil paces his balcony. Bob shows Jean in.
Jean?
Yes, Phil?
Jean, there's something I want to ask you. Do you remember back home 3 years ago? We were out on a rowboat somewhere.
Yes. We were on Lake Cayuga driving through Ithaca.
That's right. I was rowing and it was hot. And you wiped my forehead with a handkerchief.
Yes.
There was perfume on that handkerchief. A perfume you used quite a lot then. Do you remember what it was?
Yes. It was Plaisir d'Amour.
You still use it?
No, I haven't used it for almost 2 years. It's too expensive.
It is expensive.
About the most expensive there is. Why?
Well, that woman yesterday was using it. I got a whiff of it as she passed me. Will somebody please tell me what kind of nursemaid uses just about the most expensive perfume there is?
She might have been given it by the master. I mean, that sort of thing still goes on, you know. Always will.
Or she may have stolen it from her mistress.
No. A servant can steal money or clothes or almost anything and get away with it. But if she steals her perfume, she's giving herself away every time she comes into her room.
That's true, Phil. That's very true.
A frightened nursemaid who uses expensive perfume. What does that add up to? Maybe it's on that tape.
He sits at his spool-to-spool tape recorder. Jean and Bob exchange looks as Phil rewinds. Jean takes off her gloves, then her coat, as she listens.
I don't want anything to do with it, Mr. Evans. I don't like the sound of it. Oh, you'll like the money, all right. And it'll be more than this last job.
Jean's at the police station.
Miss Lennox, I put it to you. Here's a conversation that might have meant almost anything between two people who might have been almost anybody. Where can I go from that?
Well, it's Mr. Hannon I'm thinking of, Inspector. You see, this is the first real thing that's brought him to life in a long time.
The question is, how real is this?
It's very important to Mr. Hannon.
Miss Lennox, I understand your concern and I sympathize. But what you need is a psychiatrist, not a police officer.
Well, yes, you're right, Inspector. And I have no business taking up your time like this. But I thought if you could call him up and tell him that you...
But tell him what?
Well, that you were interested and that you were working on it.
Miss Lennox, I give you my word that if anything comes out of this, or even looks like coming out of it, I'll get on to Mr. Hannon at once and be pleased to.
He shakes Jean's hand and opens the office door for her.
Money and forget it. But it's dirty somehow when people are trusting you.
Would you like me to say a little prayer?
You promised when I went to his lordship that was the last thing.
Jean.
Yes, Phil?
Well, did they see you?
Right away.
Now, are they getting anywhere?
Oh, they're working like demons. They've been interviewing the barmaid and checking to see if they have anyone like Evans in their records. And they've got a man watching the Eagle just in case those two should come back there. And they've got another man.
Bravo. An excellent performance. But you know perfectly well they're not doing a thing. They've just filed it under C for crackpots.
He gets up from his chair, strides to the fireside, and stands leaning on his cane.
Bob, is 73 a bus or a tram?
A bus.
Where does it go?
Oh, a long way. I can't remember at the ends, but it goes along Oxford Street, down Park Lane, and along Knightsbridge.
Phil, she was going back to her job, wasn't she?
That's what she said.
And her job is with somebody, with a title.
A peer, because of his lordship, not a knight or a baronet.
And her ladyship was going to a concert.
That's right.
How many lords are there, Bob?
Including or excluding the Irish peerage.
I don't care.
I don't know.
Well, however many there are, there can't be so many that live in London on one particular bus route and have children of nursery age.
And wives who went to a concert last night. Bob, there's a book for lords, isn't there?
There's Burke's peerage, baronetage, and knightage of the United Kingdom. We've got one here.
Bob takes the thick book from the shelf.
Oh, here's one. Baron Yalding of Hale, H-A-Y-L-E. Two sons, one daughter. Heir, born 1949. Address, 46 Link Court, Knightsbridge. Telephone, Avenue 7473. Well, I think that's all the possibles. Well, there's a Baron Zwemer in Park Lane, but I don't think he's got any children of nursery age.
Well, how old is he?
78, never been married. Still...
Well, I think we can safely leave him out. How many?
20.
Okay. Well, now, what we want is one whose wife went to a concert. Let's start calling them up.
You can't now. It's 2 o'clock in the morning.
And I don't know about you two, but I'm exhausted.
Oh, I'm sorry. You must be. I wasn't thinking. Bob, call Miss Lennox a taxi, would you?
Certainly.
Is it all right if I come back tomorrow? I really am interested.
Oh, sure. Bob and I'll start on these phone calls first thing in the morning. I'll see you then.
Good.
She steps closer to him, hesitantly.
Well, good night.
Good night, Jean. Thanks for your help.
That's all right.
She smiles, then leaves.
No. No, I'm afraid your ladyship is misunderstanding me. I'm not giving a concert. I mean, I couldn't. It's just that I understood that you went to a concert on Tuesday. Oh, I see. Well, I must have been misinformed. I'm sorry to have bothered you, your ladyship. No go. She says she never goes to concerts. She doesn't sound the slightest bit musical. So be it.
As Bob makes a new call... Phil paces the room.
Oh, hello. Can I speak to Lady Sobey, please? I'm speaking for... Oh, really? I didn't know that... Yes, I see. I'm sorry to have troubled you. Deceased.
Before or after the concert?
2 months ago.
All right, how many is that?
17. Next... Lady Sillett.
You stay with the phone, I'll get the door.
Mayfair. 1-2-0-0.
We're making the calls now.
Oh, good.
Hello, could I speak to Lady Sillett, please? I'm speaking for Mr. Philip Hannon. Yes. Hello, Lady Sillett? Good afternoon, your ladyship. Yes, I tried to get you on Tuesday evening, but I believe you were at a concert. You were? Oh, I see. I'm speaking for Mr. Philip Hannon, the playwright. Yes, that's the one. Mr. Hannon wondered whether he could come over and see you sometime. There's a small matter on which he wanted your help.
At Lady Surrett's home...
More tea?
No, thank you.
Another cake?
No, thank you.
I can't tell you how exciting it is for me having a famous playwright here for tea with me, especially as I've been trying desperately to get tickets for your play, but I've had no luck at all.
Well, if you'll allow me, Lady Soretta, I'll be happy to leave my tickets for you at the box office any night you say.
Oh, that is kind of you, Mr. Hannon. I do appreciate it.
Lady Surrett, you must think this very odd, our asking to come to see you like this.
Oh, don't give it a thought. If one couldn't look forward to odd things happening, no one would ever want to get up in the mornings at all, would they?
No, I suppose not. But, you see, this is
kind of... Oh, just one thing. Could you possibly make it 4 tickets for this Saturday, then?
Oh, yes, of course. Make a note of that, Bob.
You see, we're dining with some old friends of my husband's, the Belmonts. They're a frightfully dreary couple. They're bird watchers, you know.
Oh.
Of course, I don't mind them watching, but they talk about it endlessly. And it just occurred to me that it would be a marvelous way to get through the evening. Now, where were we?
I was about to ask you a question.
Oh, yes, please, please do.
Well, it's a very small matter, but some friends of mine heard that your children's nurse... Oh, I've forgotten her name.
Janet Murch?
That's it, Janet Murch. That she might be leaving. My friends understood she's a very good nurse.
Oh, she is perfectly marvelous. That's why I'm so annoyed with her.
Pardon me, Lady Sir, I got lost in there somewhere.
Oh, it's quite simple, really. You see, these are not my children, they're my grandchildren. So Miss Murch walking out on me like this just has me at my wit's end.
Did Janet Murch give you any reason for leaving?
Oh, yes, indeed. She just took another position, if you please. She said she was starting on the 10th. I called the agency that sent her to me, and I complained bitterly, but I got no satisfaction.
Which agency?
The Unity Domestic Bureau.
Well, thank you, Lady Surrett. We've taken up enough of your time.
Oh, not at all. I've enjoyed it.
Bob takes Phil's arm and guides him to the door. In the doorway, Phil stops, frowning.
Would you mind if I asked you a funny sort of question?
Of course not.
Do you ever use a perfume called Plaisir d'Amour?
No, Mr. Hammond. Ought I to?
No. No, not while you're using that charming Belle de Fleur that you have on now.
Oh.
Well, thank you again, Lady Surrett.
Not at all.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Did you get that address, Bob? Unity Domestic Bureau, Janet Murch.
At the Bureau...
Janet Murch?
Yes.
Janet Murch, I seem to recall the name. I'm sure we must have placed her sometime. Now, let me see. Ah, here we are. She's with Lady Surrett in Brook Street.
Well, no, she's just left there. That's why I thought I might be able to get her.
Left there? Well, well. She's only been there a few months, too.
I'm terribly anxious to get Miss Murch. I wonder if I might have her home address.
Now, let me see. Janet Murch's home address.
I'm very sorry, madam. As I said, I'm very sorry, but we can't do that. After all, it wouldn't be very good business, would it, now? I mean, you could get in touch with the girl yourself, and then we'd lose our commission. I'll look after this lady, Miss Marston. Would you like to come in?
I'm dreadfully sorry, Mr. Killings. I didn't think.
No, of course you didn't. Have this chair.
Oh, thank you.
Well, now, I understand you're looking for a nursemaid.
Well, yes.
We've got some very good girls in our books.
Well, as I told your assistant, I particularly wanted Janet Murch because she's been so highly recommended by Lady Surrett.
Oh, we've got several others just as good, if not better. Let me just have a look. Hmm? Ah, yes. Now, here's a very excellent Scotch lass named MacDonald. Very good recommendations, too.
Well, thank you very much. I'll think it over and let you know.
I see. In that case, madam, perhaps I'd better just have your address. You never know, Janet Murch might come in, or perhaps if not, we can find you somebody else. It's Mrs...
Mrs. Jean Lennox.
Jean Lennox?
603 Regent Court.
Regent Court.
Portman Square, West 1.
Portman Square, West 1. Telephone?
Arcade 6549.
Arcade 6549. Mrs. Jean Lennox.
Well, thank you very much.
Something has caused the man to think. He shows her to the door.
Good day, madam. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Killings. I didn't know, really. I didn't. No one told me.
Go on, go on.
Well, he was very tall, almost 6 feet. So I don't think he could be Evans.
What sort of voice did he have?
Oh, smooth and oily. He was very positive.
Well, did he wheeze when he breathed?
Well, if he did, I didn't hear it. I'm afraid that's a blind alley, Phil. I mean, the agency did look genuine. And after all, even if Janet Murch is your girl, there's no reason why the agency should be in on it.
No, maybe not.
A tall, auburn-haired woman in a smart navy blue suit arrives at Phil's building and goes inside. The lift operator hurries to join her.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
603, please.
603. Sixth floor, that's Mr. Hannon.
Hannon? The name I've got here is Lennox.
Well, 603 is Mr. Hannon, ma'am. 603, right there, ma'am.
Thank you.
Bob answers the door.
Excuse me, does Mrs. Lennox live here? I'm from the Unity Domestic Bureau. It's about the situation.
Oh, I see. Can I have your name, please?
Alice MacDonald.
All right. I'll just see if Mrs. Lennox is in. Won't you come in, please?
Thank you.
Alice steps in.
Excuse me one moment.
She waits in the hall, watching him go. Her manner relaxes a little as he closes the door, and she glances around her.
To sell me.
How did she find you here?
Well, I keep this address because I thought if they got a hold of Murch...
Okay. Bob, you take her into the living room. Jean, you keep her talking because I want to listen. Tell her that you're making these arrangements for me, that my family's coming over from America. Get it?
Yes.
Okay.
They get up from the kitchen table, and Phil waits in the next room.
I'll wait in here. I don't want her to know I can't see.
Bob shows Alice in.
Oh, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, madam.
Won't you sit down?
Oh, thank you. I hope I've come to the right place. Only the bureau said Mrs. Lennox, but the lift man said Mr. Hannon.
Well, yes, I'm Mrs. Lennox, and I was inquiring not for myself, but for Mr. Hannon, who lives here.
Oh, I see.
You see, Mr. Hannon's family may be coming over from America soon, and if they do, they'll need a nurse.
Yes, madam. Only the bureau said there was someone else you particularly wanted, but if you couldn't get her, perhaps I would do.
Someone named Janet Murch was recommended to me. You don't happen to know her?
Murch? No, sir, I don't. Only the bureau said to show you my references.
Thank you, I'll take them.
Alice looks curious.
Oh, my, these are very good. Here, Phil, have a look at them. They're really very impressive, aren't they?
Yes, very.
Well, thank you very much, but as I said, Mr. Hannon's plans aren't quite definite yet. If he does need a nurse, we'll call you. If you'd like to leave your address...
Oh, you can always reach me through the bureau. Good afternoon, madam.
Good afternoon.
Bob shows her out.
Good afternoon.
Bob.
What is it?
Go after that girl. Don't lose sight of her. Find out where she lives, and if you can, get a picture of her.
Picture? What on earth for?
She might be Murch. The barmaid seen her. Lady Surrett seen her. Now hurry up, you lose her.
How'll I get a photograph?
With a camera, you idiot. Hurry.
Camera, of course.
Well, did you smell it?
No, what?
Did you hear it?
Well, what?
Oh, you people with eyes, you're so busy looking, you never notice anything. She smelled of that perfume and that Scots accent of hers that was pure vaudeville.
Then you really think she was Murch?
She could be. It isn't the right sort of voice, but people can do things with their voices.
Bob hurries out onto the street and heads after Alice. As she crosses the street, he keeps his head down, shielding his eyes with the brim of his hat. A double-decker bus stops, and Alice nips aboard. Luckily, Bob finds a taxi.
Follow that bus.
He gets in, and the black cab drives round the corner after the bus. The elderly taxi driver follows the number 73 bus, close behind it. Bob crouches down in the back and puts his glasses on to peer up at the bus. The cabbie looks bewildered. Bob sits up and puts his glasses away again. They stop in traffic, and Bob starts to get out.
Hey, what about the money?
Look, go on.
As the bus pulls away, Bob gets back in. The bus slows, and Alice jumps off. As Bob gets out of the taxi and pays the cabbie, Alice heads into a department store.
Keep the change.
He follows her in, but a man with a camera gets in his way.
May I interest you in this new cleaner, madam? It's absolutely marvelous. It cleans all the spots right away. May I show you? Look. It's absolutely wonderful.
Bob keeps a close eye on Alice. As she glances at what's on each floor, he pretends to browse at a display counter. Alice steps onto an escalator.
Oh, here.
Thank you.
Bob follows Alice, having been given some sample cleaner from the woman at the counter. Alice arrives at the next floor up and walks off the escalator. She heads for a selection of toys as Bob arrives and watches her. While she speaks with her sales assistant, Bob edges around a large glass cabinet filled with cameras. He continues his observation through the glass. He suddenly takes notice of all the cameras.
Yes, very well, sir.
Where do I go with this?
Over there, sir. Just by the haberdashery. Good day, sir.
£3.10, is that right?
£3.10. Yes.
And ready for use?
Ready for immediate use, sir. Shall I wrap it up for you, sir?
No. I'll take it just as it is.
Very good, sir.
Bob glances over his shoulder to see Alice leaving with a large parcel.
Please, I'm in a hurry.
Alice has gone. She's taken her brown parcel to an escalator and rides down it. Bob arrives just afterwards with the camera he's bought, then heads for the stairs. He makes it down to the entrance at almost the same time as Alice. Standing in front of her, he snaps her photo, pretending to have been pointing the camera at the gentleman behind her. Alice walks out into the rainy evening, and Bob follows. That night...
Style. Toast and butter is on the left, your coffee is on the right.
And a very pretty girl directly opposite me.
Well, thank you, sir. It's just like old times, isn't it, Phil?
It's certainly like old something.
All right, you marry me, and I promise you faithfully I'll give up cooking.
That's the most refreshing proposal I've ever had.
Well, I'll have you know I don't go around just proposing to anybody. I've only proposed twice in my life. Both times to the same man.
I know, Jean. I wish I could see it your way. But I can't.
Well, eat your dinner. It'll get cold.
Bob gets back drenched from the rain and with his hat brim drooping. He shakes his hat irritably and throws it away.
Did you get anything?
Yes. Pneumonia.
You're wet. I can smell that tweed suit over here.
Yes, it's the rain, you know. It makes you wet if you stand out in it for hours on end without a coat.
Well, where did she go?
Well, first of all, she went into Barker's in Kensington, where she bought something.
Well, what?
Well, I don't know. I was busy buying the camera. Her parcel was a long one, about 2 feet long, and, you know. She came out of Barker's. Rain started. Took a bus to Hammersmith, still raining. Looked in a chemist's window, went into chemist's, came out again. Raining. Went into a cafe and had a cup of tea and one bun. Or it could have been one tart. The view was obscured with the rain on the window. Went into chain store, Walk round store again. Came out. Excuse me, it's been smudged just here. Oh, yes, I see. Raining heavily. Do you want me to go on? There's a lot more like that, just like that.
But did you find out where she lives?
I don't believe that she has a home. If she has, she despises it. She wouldn't be caught dead in it. She fast prefers to wander around the streets.
But you must have left her someplace.
Excuse me, Mr. Hannon, but there is no must about it. As a matter of fact, she left me.
Oh, no.
As I followed her to a building, 224 Stoner Street. She went inside. I waited outside. I waited and waited and waited. After 3 hours, I began to think things looked a little bit fishy, so I went inside. It was an empty sort of warehouse. No sign of McDonald.
Do you think she ducked you deliberately?
I don't know. There were at least four perfectly reasonable exits back inside that she could have used.
Well, that certainly was a dead-end street.
Well, never mind, Bob. I think you did very well.
Here, have a cup of hot coffee.
Oh, thank you. Anyhow, I got her photograph.
You did?
Yeah. Except that I'm not quite sure that I... turn the film on properly.
Lady Surratt is shown the photo.
No, Mr. Hannon, no. This isn't Janet Murch.
What, is it anything like her?
Not at all. This girl's a bit older and quite different.
Have you ever seen this girl in the photograph?
No, never that I can think of.
You're sure it's not just a bad photograph?
But it's a very good photograph, taken in conditions of extreme difficulty.
I have a feeling there's something perfectly fascinating going on. I do wish you'd tell me what it is.
I wish I could, too. But frankly, Lady Surratt, I can't explain it even to myself just now.
Oh. Well, if you ever feel you can, please call me. It'll make my dinner table conversation for the next 6 months, and I never have anything to say.
Well, thank you again, Lady Surratt.
Thank you.
They head out.
She's got no right not to be Murch. She even smelled right. And you can't tell me it's just coincidence. Two nursemaids using the same expensive perfume.
Frankly, Mr. Hannon, I didn't smell it.
You? I could cook fish and chips under your nose and you'd never smell it.
When I first met McDonald, I didn't have a cold. She was the cause of my catching it.
Smells are very tricky, Phil. If you have a certain scent in mind, you can always make yourself believe you can smell it.
That's perfectly true. I can always smell escaping gas whenever I give my mind to it.
What are you two trying to tell me? That I've invented this out of whole cloth?
Well, of course.
Because if that's what you think, will you both please stop humoring me? Stop treating me as if I was some child whom you had to keep amused with a game of Let's Play Detective.
Bob parks Phil's car at the side of the road.
Drive Miss Lennox home, would you please, Bob?
Phil gets out and strides in through the main entrance of his apartment building.
Never mind, Bob. You go on up with him. I'll get a taxi.
Phil arrives back in his apartment. He closes the door, then props his cane up and takes off his coat, hat, and scarf. He picks up his cane again and walks through into the next room. He stops suddenly, looking unsettled. He senses that the doors to the balcony are open, the soft curtains are moving in the night breeze. He goes to the doors and pulls them closed. He turns and pauses, leaning with one hand on his cane and the other on the back of his leather armchair. He sits down in the chair and switches on his tape recorder.
You go down to Meter and take over. Then we take it off your hands and give you your money. And you go on a night...
Who's that? Oh. Why didn't you take Jean home?
Well, she took a taxi. Thought you shouldn't be alone.
Now I need a nursemaid.
This long holiday. What could be simpler than that? But you don't understand. I might get to like it. You won't have time for that, my dear. No, Mr. Evans, no. I won't do it. I won't.
It's no good, Mr. Evans. I'm after you.
In just 5 minutes.
Sure, I know it's unreasonable.
You wouldn't.
But I'm not a reasonable man. No, if McDonald isn't Murch,
not just as long as
and you're not the little guy at the agency,
Now, come on, pull
who
yourself
Who is Merch?
There's nothing to cry about. Why are you...
Lady Surrette? And who are you, Mr.
What does
Evans?
It matter anyway? There's no decent...
And who are you, Mr. Evans?
Dickie Dite, show a light, or else the dogs can't follow. Or else the dogs can't follow.
Follow?
Did you call, Mr. Hannon?
No, I sang. Bob, I want to put an advertisement in the newspapers.
Which ones?
All of them. If Janet Murch is in need of help or advice, will she call Arcade 6549?
Well, that's our number.
I know. Strictest confidence.
A woman's gloved hand drops a coin into a slot, paying for a newspaper at a newsstand. Gene arrives at Phil's and presses his doorbell. Bob answers.
Bob, how on earth could you let him do this?
Well, I told you this morning I didn't think.
Think what?
I've just read this ridiculous advertisement of yours.
When did you start reading classified ads?
Well, I talked to Bob this morning and he told me what you'd done. Do you realize what you're setting yourself up for?
Of course. I'm trying to find Janet Murch. And Evans, particularly Evans.
But don't you realize that you're telling whoever they are that you know something? And you're telling them where to find you. Phil, this is the last thing in the world I want to say to you, but you've got to face it. You can't afford to get mixed up in any violence.
Hello? Arcade 6549. Mr. Hannon's apartment. Oh. Yes. It's a woman. She says she's Janet Murch.
Give me that phone. You get on the extension and take a tape of this.
Bob takes a second phone and hurries into the other room.
It's okay.
This is Philip Hannon speaking.
Hello. What's the good news?
Is this Miss Janet Murch?
That's right. Janet Murch. You want to contact me and I want to contact you. Do I need help and advice? I certainly do.
Where are you speaking from?
From the Bar Docks. Best bar in London. Why don't you come down and have one?
It's the barmaid.
Well, whoever that was, it wasn't Janet Murch.
Oh, just a drunk who read the advertisement and rang up for fun.
Well, I'm wrong. It's a bloke called, Philip Hannon, if that means anything to you.
Now, look, you don't have to be concerned about me. There are day and night porters downstairs. There are two locks and a chain on that door. And I've got Bob. I'm defended like Fort Knox. What about you?
Me?
Well, you're in this, you know. You went to the agency, and if the agency is in it, they'll be looking for you, too. And you live by yourself.
Oh, nonsense,
What do you mean, nonsense? Don't you live by yourself?
Well, yes.
Well, I don't want you alone in that apartment for the next few days. Bob, get Miss Lennox some rooms in a hotel.
Well, now, look, if you think I'm going to move out of a perfectly good apartment for some lousy hotel...
Take her along, Bob. A reasonably nice hotel. Maybe even a private bath.
You always were the most impossible man.
Goodbye, Jean.
Goodbye, Phil.
Bob and Jean head away, leaving Phil deep in thought. He turns to face out of the open balcony doors at the twinkling lights of London. He steps outside and leans on the wall. A steamboat chugs its way along the dark river far below. Sitting alone in a small flat, a dark-haired young woman wears a plain blue uniform dress with a white collar, cuffs, and waistband. She's sitting at a table with a newspaper spread over it and seems troubled. She takes a pad from her handbag and hurriedly writes something on it, then puts it back in her bag.
Who is it?
It's me, dear. Elsie Scarlett.
Oh, just a moment.
Oh, Janet, love, I have to go out. Would you be a dear and take care of Pokey for me? I'd take her with me, but it's a seance, and Madame Fabio's medium doesn't get on with Pokey at all.
Well, I was just going out.
Oh, dear.
But only to make a phone call. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Oh, Janet, you are a duck. I'll wait for you.
Janet quickly puts on her coat, picks up her bag, and goes. Janet creeps along a dark alleyway, pauses, then disappears around a corner. The dark figure of a man in a hat emerges from the shadows and follows her. She hurries through an open gate in a high metal fence. The man watches, then goes after her. Near London Bridge, by the riverside, Janet rushes to a red telephone box and goes inside. The mysterious man watches her. She searches in her handbag as she lifts the receiver. The man goes to the phone box and she looks round in fear as he flings open the door. Phil gropes for his phone. He knocks the receiver onto the floor, then finds it.
Arcade 6549. Yes. This is Janet Murch, isn't it?
Yes.
I recognize your voice. Well, never mind about that now. This is Philip Hannon speaking. I inserted the advertisement.
Sent to contact you.
That's right. I want to talk to you. Can you come here?
No. I can't leave home.
Where are you speaking from? Can he come over here? 813 Regent Court, Portman Square.
No, but anywhere else you say.
But why not here?
How would Mike see it?
All right. Do you know a pub called the Eagle near here?
Yes.
I'll meet your father there now. It'll only take me a few minutes.
No, not now. In an hour would be better.
All right, I'll be there. Goodbye.
She puts the phone down. Then the mysterious man produces a small knife and stabs her. She collapses, falling out of the door of the phone box.
I'm sorry, sir. He doesn't seem to answer. Can I take a message for you? Oh. All right, sir.
Simmons, would you mind taking a message for Mr. Matthews?
Not at all, Mr. Hannon.
Tell him I've had a telephone call and that I've gone to the Eagle. Ask him to follow at once.
All right, sir.
Phil heads off. Phil walks along a dark and foggy street. He bumps into someone.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Where is this, Governor?
Why, you're on the north side of Portman Square.
Well, where's Baker Street?
It's just 23 paces behind you. Here, take my arm, I'll show you.
Thanks. It sort of mists up my spectacles, and I can't see any more than if I'd got my head in a bucket.
Must be a great handicap, having to wear glasses.
Phil arrives at the pub.
Well, here's a brave man. Oh, it's you, dear.
Good evening.
Straight scotch, no ice, isn't it?
Yes.
Do you know, I think you're wonderful the way you get about. If you hadn't told me, I should never have known that you... I suppose you sort of get used to it.
Don't ever believe that. You get so there are some things you can do, but you never get used to it. Is there anybody here?
Not a soul, dear. No one's coming out in a night like this, even to get to the waterhole.
I wonder if you'd help me.
Of course.
I'm expecting to meet somebody here. Should be a middle-aged man. Take a good look at him and see if he's the same one I asked you about the other day. And get him talking. I want to hear his voice. If he is the same one, cough.
But I told you I didn't get a good look at him.
Well, if he's anything like the one you remember, cough.
All right.
If you cough, I'll go. And you say, good night, Mr. Doyle. Otherwise, come over and give me a drink.
If I think it's the same man, I cough and I say good night, Mr. Doyle. Okay, dear.
Now, can you tell me exactly where the pinball machine is?
It's over there on the right. No, a little this way. That's it.
He turns back to her.
You've been very kind. You see, I particularly don't want him to know about my eyes.
Don't you know?
No.
All right, ducks. Whatever you say.
Thanks.
At the pinball machine, Phil takes a coin out of his pocket and finds the slot to put it in. A man arrives.
Good evening.
Evening. Half a mile, please.
Yes, sir.
The man glances at Phil briefly.
Here you are, sir.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
What a night, eh?
It is that. You can't see your hand before your face.
You remember the bad fog we had in the war?
I reckon this is thicker.
Phil's listening to his voice as the barmaid brings over his drink.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's the same one. He looks quite a respectable little cove.
Stand in front of him and talk so I'll know where he is.
He's on the third bar stool from the door. Well, I certainly didn't expect to see any customers out tonight, and here I am with two.
Well, sometimes people have to go out, even in a fog.
Good evening. Nasty night, isn't it?
It is that, sir.
Makes everybody late for things.
You're not by any chance Mr. Hannon?
Yes, I am.
I'm Mr. March. Let's sit down to a table.
Well,
I'll take your drink over for you, ducks.
She grabs Phil's drink, then his arm.
Here's a nice table. How's that?
They sit, and she puts down Phil's drink.
Okay, dear?
Thanks.
Good evening, sir. Oh, Mr. Matthews, I've got...
But Bob goes before the concierge can speak.
And not a word can I get out of her, except that she wants to see you. But there's something not right, sir. Not right at all. And not been for a long time.
Has she ever mentioned a man named Evans to you?
Evans? No, never mentioned that name. No, nor any other. I tell you, she's been that close.
Well...
The man subtly moves Phil's drink and watches him. Phil feels across the table for it.
Cheers.
How long ago did Mr. Hannon leave?
About 20 minutes ago, Mr. Matthews.
It's only a little bit of a distance.
Do you mind if I take your arm? I'm not used to these fogs.
Why, of course, sir. Though it seems to have thinned out considerably.
Yes, it has.
As they walk along the pavement, the barmaid watches them go from the pub door. Bob arrives when they've gone and looks into the pub briefly, then decides to go in.
Sharp round here to the left.
He went right out of that door. Yes, and he turned right round to the left there and he was with another man.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bob hurries away. The man guides Phil across a dark street. Bob looks around him. The man leads Phil past a building with a sign that reads, "Danger, keep out."
This is it. Here we are now. Watch your step. Be careful.
He helps Phil up the front steps and into the run-down building that's in the process of being demolished.
Just a minute, sir, now, while I switch on the light. That's better. Now we can see what we're doing. Now, if you'd come upstairs, I'm afraid it's rather a climb. We're right up at the top. Careful. Take the first. There we are.
Bob still searching. The man guides Phil up a deteriorating staircase without a banister. Phil uses his cane subtly with the man standing behind him.
It's a long climb, isn't it? It's not much of a place, as you see. Here we are now.
He unlocks a door marked, "Danger, keep this door locked."
Now, I'll take you in, and then I leave you together because she won't talk if I'm there, I know. Come in, sir.
Phil walks in, then the man hurries out behind him, shuts the door, and locks it.
Mr. Murch? Is anybody here?
He takes a few steps forward. He taps the bare floor with his cane and realizes that the floor ends at a large gaping hole in the brick wall. Mr. Murch hurries away from the building's entrance. Phil's right at the exposed edge of the partially demolished property and probes the open air with his cane. He looks frightened, feels for the edge of the floor, and turns. He takes a few steps forward. The floor gives way and he loses his footing. He sits up in shock and feels the broken edge of the building desperately. He starts turning away from the edge.
Mr. Hannon! Mr. Hannon, where are you?
Bob! Up here! Up high!
Mr. Hannon, stay where you are! Don't move! Don't move till I get to you!
What's the matter?
Man up there! Come on, follow me!
Bob and the policeman rush up the building stairs.
Mr. Hannon! Mr. Hannon! Are you all right?
I'm all right, just get me out of here!
Bob and the policeman try shoulder barging the door open. Then the policeman tries ramming it with a long wooden beam. Phil is still sprawled near the edge of the broken floor. A chunk gives way beneath him, and he scrambles back frantically from the brink. The policeman and Bob get the door open. They help Phil to his feet.
You're all right now.
Where am I? What is this?
Oh, it's a bomb building. The whole front is missing.
One more step and I would have been missing too.
Bob picks up Phil's cane for him, then takes his arm and leads him out. At the domestic bureau, the tall man Jean met rises from his desk as Mr. Murch returns. He sits again when he sees who it is.
Hello, Joe. Filthy night, isn't it?
It is that, Mr. Pillings.
Well, did you see Mr. Hannon?
Yes, Mr. Pillings. And it's all done.
Oh, well, that's good news, Joe. Very good news indeed. It'll save everybody a lot of trouble. Hello. Yes. Joe's just come in. He says Mr. Hannon won't be needing a nursemaid anymore. Yes, I will. Says to tell you very well done, Joe.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Pillings.
Like some tea, Joe?
No, thank you, Mr. Pillings, not now. I find if I drink tea at night, it keeps me awake.
Oh.
Phil's back at home. Jean takes his teacup and saucer.
Thanks, Jean.
I want you to promise me that you'll never do that again.
Well, it isn't the sort of thing folks do again, is it? You know, Jean, the strangest thing happened to me out there on that ledge. I thought I didn't care about living anymore, but I was wrong. I found that out when I came right to it. I cared desperately. Do you know what I'm trying to say, Jean?
Yes, Phil. Only don't get yourself killed proving you want to live.
Excuse me, Mr. Hannon. Inspector Grodning and Detective Sergeant Luce are here.
Oh, are they? Well, show them in.
Won't you come in, please, Inspector?
Morning, Mr. Hannon.
Hello, Inspector.
I'm told you've been having some adventures, Mr. Hannon.
Adventures? No. If you have a dramatic mind, you might think someone had tried to break my neck. But I'll bet there's a perfectly innocent explanation for that.
Mr. Hannon, according to the barmaid at the Eagle, you were expecting this man. Why were you meeting him?
Did you know who he was?
No, but I knew who he wasn't. He wasn't Evans. Outside of that, I only know what he called himself. The father of a girl named Janet Murch.
I see. You've been making inquiries for her, haven't you? Advertising and so on.
That's right, Inspector.
What was your interest in Janet Murch, Mr. Hammond?
Well, she was the girl I heard in the bar.
And you contacted her?
Yes, I spoke to her on the telephone last night. Inspector, you have to find Murch, and you have to find her fast.
Mr. Hammond, Janet Murch may have been associated with criminals, as you thought, though that's by no means certain. But there's one thing that is certain. Whatever anybody was asking her to do tonight or tomorrow, crime or no crime, she won't do it now.
Her body was taken out of the river early this morning.
She was murdered?
Yes. A nasty job with a knife.
And what's more, I'm responsible.
You responsible?
Yes, with that advertisement. She saw the advertisement, but so did Evans. And Evans knew I was onto something through her. So he murdered her. And then tried to have me murdered, too. I killed that poor kid as surely as if I'd shot her. Inspector, we have to get Evans. And we have to get him before tomorrow.
Inspector Grovening strides to the balcony doors.
Mr. Hannon, as I told you before...
But it's starting, Inspector. It's the ninth today. It's happening somewhere out there now.
You must remember, Mr. Hannon, there are 9 million people out there. 9 million. And none of us have ever seen Evans. And only you have even heard him.
He turns to face the balcony and London under a rich amber sky. In Phil's kitchen.
This morning he seems to prefer whiskey to scrambled eggs.
Well, if it helps him get through today, I'm all for it.
So am I, but it seems to have no more effect on him than milk on a baby.
I'll go see what I can do. Oh, does he know I stayed here last night?
He knows that today is the 10th. That's all he knows.
Jean goes into the living room.
Jean?
Yes, Phil.
Well, you didn't just come in.
No, I stayed here last night.
Stayed here?
Yes, in your spare room.
Well, I hope you were comfortable.
He picks up his whiskey.
Can I fix you one?
Phil, at 10 o'clock in the morning...
At 10 o'clock in the morning and at 10:30, on the 10th hour of the 10th day. Let's drink to that.
You don't mind that I stayed here. Bob has to go out occasionally, and I...
And you felt there was a job for an assistant keeper? Well, the facts support that. Seems I can't get off the string without nearly getting myself killed, and other people quite killed.
But you didn't know.
I didn't know Evans was that desperate.
Well, how could you?
He puts his drink down again and turns to his tape recorder.
You go down to Meteor and take over. Then we take it off your hands and give you your money. And you go on a nice long...
Why do you keep playing that thing over and over again? You must know it by heart.
I knew it by heart to start with. But you can know your words without knowing what they mean. Somewhere that thing is trying to tell me about Evans. Who he is and what it is he's going to do today. But I can't seem to hear it. And the rest of you can only see.
You wouldn't. No, my dear, I wouldn't do that. Not just as long as you do as you're told. Now, come on, pull yourself together. There's nothing to cry about. Or you'll be
all right, Mr. Evans. You win.
He sits back in his leather armchair, looking weary and defeated. He turns to Jean, towards the open balcony doors.
Jean, you over by the window?
Yes.
it still foggy?
A little. It's almost clear now.
What do you see?
You know, Phil. You told me the first time I came here.
That's right. Houses of Parliament, Big Ben, Charing Cross Station. Station. I wonder if Mary would be arriving at a station. What train would she be on? The suburban train? The boat train? What's that? A boat on the river?
Yes.
Well, why is he sounding if it isn't foggy?
They often do.
That's right. Leaving and arriving and so forth. I remember the time I was coming over from the Queen Mary. Mary on the 10th. Bob! Bob! Bob!
Sir?
Call Cunard and find out when the Queen Mary arrives.
Queen Mary?
Yes, and hurry.
Why?
Don't you get it? It was then when that pinball machine made all the racket. I missed a bit there. I heard it as Mary arrives, but it could have been the Queen Mary arrives. And you go down to meet her. Could have been down to meet her at Southampton. And she's not a girl, but a ship. They were taking Janet Murch down to meet somebody off
Hello?
That boat.
I want some information, please. Can you tell me what time the Queen Mary docked at Southampton?
Well, have you got him?
Thank you. Thank you. Hold on a moment, please. The Queen Mary docked at 6 o'clock this morning. The first boat train should have arrived in London just after 10.
What time is it now?
10:30.
All right, look. Get her passenger list. Find out what rich first-class passengers are traveling with children. And get after that fireball policeman.
Yes? Well, thank you very much indeed. I'm sorry to bother you. Goodbye. That closes them off. Now, that's Mr. and Mrs. Richard Avery from Houston, Texas. The two children brought their own nurse with them.
Isn't there one more?
Yes, the Argentinians, the Demestris.
Ah, yes, the Demestris. We haven't been able to get hold of them yet. They've taken a flat in Kensington. Anyhow, the daughter there is 17. They'd hardly need a nurse for her, would they? Still, we'll go on and try and find them, Mr. Hannon, to be on the safe side. I hope you're wrong, Mr. Hannon.
Inspector, I don't want to be right. I'm just scared sick that I might be.
A nursemaid pushes a wheelchair over a zebra crossing and makes her way toward a park gate. As she passes through the gate, a stuffed doll falls out of the pushchair. She stops to pick it up and gives it back to the child. She carries on her way and heads for a broad path lined with trees on either side. Instead, she turns abruptly and heads along a narrow path leading off to one side. In no time at all, she seems to have vanished. Later, Phil and Jean wait in a car while police check the building across the road from the park gate.
Oh, I don't know if it's nerves or the cold, but I'm freezing to death. Oh,
sorry, there's a blanket back here somewhere. Here we are. Yeah, that better?
Thank you.
You seem to be taking forever up there.
It's only been 10 minutes. They know what they're doing.
They're just active. They don't know what they're doing. A 17-year-old girl wouldn't need a nursemaid. I'm completely lost. I can't figure it. What's that? What happened?
I think it's Mrs. Demestre.
They get out of the car. A high window is open, and Phil does his best to listen. Inspector Grovening hurries out to a policeman.
I want you to cover all the gates in the gardens. We're looking for a 17-year-old girl in a wheelchair. With a nursemaid wearing white uniform, black shoes, dark blue cape and cap. And hurry.
Right, sir. She's an invalid?
Well, her father told me she's a child who never grew up. They keep her with them always.
Bob joins Phil and Jean.
Those poor people.
That night, Phil sits on a bench in the park. Gene walks over to him.
Gene?
Yes.
Any luck?
No. Phil, don't you think we ought to go home? It's getting awfully cold.
No. I'm not an awful lot of use, but I want to stick around just in case.
She sits down next to him, and Bob sits next to Gene. A policeman searches bushes nearby with a lamp. He finds the doll and the abandoned wheelchair.
I think they found something.
Take me over.
Branches are pulled away from the discovery. Gene brings Phil to a fence by the narrow path.
There's a fence here.
Get some lights up to cover this area.
Well, maybe it's
a... Well, hello, Mr. Hammond.
Good evening, Inspector. What did they find?
Well, it's an invalid chair, the upright kind. I think it'll come down so that you can lie flat in it.
Anything in it?
Yes, a robe and a pillow and a... What do you call it? A gollywog.
A what?
A gollywog. I don't think we have them in America. They're kind of a soft doll with a black face.
A soft doll?
Yes, it's rather a large one. Looks new.
Inspector!
What is it, Mr. Hammond?
The doll. Could I please have it for a minute?
What for?
I just want to hold it. There won't be any fingerprints on it.
All right.
Inspector Grovening hands it to Gene. Phil feels the soft doll.
She went into the department store, in the toy department, and bought something. A package about 2 feet long.
He holds the doll against his nose and sniffs.
Inspector!
Yes, Mr. Hannon?
If you want to find the person who handled this last, and handled it quite a lot, I suggest you come with me to 224 Stoner Street.
You mean McDonald?
I don't know who I mean by now, but you followed that perfume to Stoner Street.
It's an empty house.
Of course it is. If you kidnapped a child, where would you take it? The Claridge's? Well, how about it, Inspector? Are you willing to take another chance on one of my long shots? If so, we'd better hurry.
Mr. Matthews, you know where this place is. You better come with us. Is Lennox and you drive Mr. Hammond home?
Yes, of course, Inspector.
But Evans may be at that place, so you won't know him.
Mr. Hammond, if you're right about this, you've seen more with no eyes than most of us with two. But this is where things might get rough, and if they did, it's no place for you. Sorry. Come on.
Inspector Grovening and Bob head off together. Phil and Gene watch police cars depart.
I can't stand here all night.
Where's the car?
Straight ahead.
They're being watched by a figure clutching the bars of high railings in the shadows. The figure moves off once they've passed. Gene holds the car door open for Phil, who gets in. She gets in the front seat and drives off. They arrive back outside Phil's building and get out of the car. Another car arrives and parks right behind theirs. Its driver is obscured by shadow. Phil and Gene arrive at his front door. Hearing the telephone ringing inside, Phil hurries to unlock his door and go in.
Hello.
We got them, Mr. Hannon.
Child's there?
Yes. She's a bit sleepy. They've given her something. But she's quite all right. Look, The inspector wants to speak to you. Hold on.
Well, Mr. Hannon, I congratulate you. Yes, you were quite right.
Have you got Evans?
Well, there are two men, but we don't know which is Evans yet.
But one of them's an old friend of ours called Teapot Charlie. He's had a good many different names in one time or another, and I dare say Evans is one of them. Now, the other one answers pretty closely to the barmaid's description of your Mr. Murch.
Yeah, but how about McDonald?
Well, there is a woman, but she's not the one Mr. Matthews followed.
Not McDonald? Well, that's funny.
Oh, we got the nets out for her. Shouldn't take long to pick her up.
I see. Any trouble?
No, they came like lambs.
Oh, then I wouldn't have been so much in the way after all, would I, Inspector?
Hello? Hello?
Inspector? Hello?
Hello? Well, he's hung up. I'm afraid he's still pretty sore.
Phil checks his phone and listens to the receiver.
Oh, there you are. I thought I'd lost you. Well, congratulations. Not at all. You're welcome.
He lowers the receiver slowly, sensing that Jean's still in the room. He sits in his armchair and puts the phone down.
Well, that appears to be that.
Did they get them?
Oh, yes. Inspector Grovening and the British police arrived in the nick of time. Will wonders never cease?
Well, while you're sitting here in the dark moping, I'm going to fix myself a drink.
She pours a drink as he switches on the lights.
Help yourself if you have anything to drink, too. But personally, I think I'm going to go to bed.
Don't worry. I'll get out. Just as soon as I finish this drink, I'll be gone. Here's to Philip Hannon. It's no good congratulating him on a good job. All you get's a grunt. It's no good wishing him happiness because he doesn't want it and won't have it. He'd rather be lonely and tragic. It's no good wishing him luck because for him, all luck must be bad luck. So here's to Mr. Hannon, the man for whom something must always go wrong or not be complete enough so that he could sit and mope about it. To Mr. Hannon, who's so proud he won't let anybody help him, who doesn't want any help, even if it's only across the street.
Shall I call you a taxi? Or is there anything else you want to say?
She glares at him and storms out, leaving her drink behind. She opens her suitcase on the bed in the spare room and packs the things she'd put in the wardrobe. Phil stands in the hall, listening through the open doors between them in the apartment. She glances back at him only fleetingly as she packs hurriedly. She picks up her case and coat, but stops, encountering Phil in the hall.
Well?
As soon as Bob comes, I'll go.
Bob's on his way home now. There's nothing to stay for.
No, I guess there isn't. Goodbye, Phil.
Goodbye, Jean.
She opens the front door and lets herself out. The second it closes, Phil strides up to the door and listens close to it, intently. The needle on the lift's dial shows it descending, and Phil strains to listen to it. A gloom settles over him. He takes keys from his pocket and locks his door. He fastens the chain on the door, then in the hall picks up the receiver from a phone on a small table. He listens to it and, realizing the line is dead, rattles the switch hook. Someone is trying the doorknob outside.
Jean? Bob?
He listens to the door, looking anxious. Hearing the footsteps outside, he backs away slowly. He hurries through the apartment to the back door, which he locks, then checks. He heads back the way he came and sits down in his leather armchair at his large spool-to-spool tape recorder.
Come in, Mr. Evans. We're equal now. Not afraid of the dark, are you? Come in, Mr. Evans. Come in, Mr. Evans. We're equal now. Not afraid of the dark, are you? Come in, Mr. Evans.
He gets up and hurries into the study. At the desk that Bob uses, he picks up a different make of microphone connected to another recorder.
Come in, Mr. Evans. Today is the 10th. I've been expecting you.
The light from his back door's window is being observed outside.
Not afraid of the dark, are you?
He hurries to the back door, listens against its textured glass window, then unlocks it. He opens it a crack, then closes it and pauses. He dashes away, leaving the back door closed but unlocked. In the kitchen, he unscrews a light bulb from a hanging shade. He remembers there's a second light in the room, but as the shade's enclosed, making getting at the bulb tricky, he smashes the whole thing with his cane. From outside, the light in the back door's window goes out. Phil moves through the apartment, searching for more lights. He switches one off, then unscrews another pair of wall-mounted bulbs in a hurry. He does the same to two other bulbs, knocking off their small shades in his haste. With these two off, the room is finally in darkness. He moves through the living room into the study and turns off the desk lamp. The dark figure that had been watching him earlier enters the apartment through the back door. A pistol is silhouetted in the figure's hand. In the living room, Phil fumbles to find the switch for a standard lamp. He switches it off, then goes to his tape recorder. The intruder steps on broken glass and freezes. Phil's heard the crunch and listens. He edges to a door holding the controls for the two tape recorders as the intruder begins moving slowly. He senses the heat from a lamp still on at his elbow and winces as he unscrews the hot bulb. The apartment goes completely dark and a shadow moves through it. Phil ducks back from his hiding place at the doorframe.
Come in, Mr. Evans. We're equal now. Not afraid of the dark, are you? Come in, Mr. Evans. Come in, Mr. Evans. We're equal now. Not afraid of the dark, are you? Come in, Mr. Evans.
The confused intruder goes into the study. Phil gathers the controls in his hands, straining to hear where the intruder is. The intruder opens a side door and creeps out onto the balcony. The figure opens the balcony doors to the living room, and Phil turns his head to the breeze on his face, looking panicked. Phil moves just as a bullet hits the doorframe where he'd been standing. He crawls along the floor with his tape recorder controls. The intruder moves through the living room.
Come in, Mr. Evans. Today, I've been expecting you. Not afraid of the dark, are you? Come in, Mr. Evans. We're equal now. Not afraid of the dark, are you?
You have to kill me, Mr. Evans. I know too much.
Phil ducks as the shots ring out.
Come in, Mr. Evans.
Today is the...
We're equal now.
I've been expecting...
Not afraid of the dark, are you?
Not afraid of the dark,
come in.
Are you?
Come in,
the baffled intruder trips and falls. Phil gets to the back door just ahead of the figure, and they tussle violently in the darkness. As they grapple with one another, they bundle out onto the metal fire escape stairway outside the back door. Both seem equally matched, but Phil manages to swing backwards, flinging the intruder over the edge. Phil leans on the staircase rail, listening and thinking with a desperate expression. Phil lets Bob and the police in.
Are you hurt, Mr. Hannon?
We heard the shots. What was it?
Was it Evans?
It was Evans, all right, but I don't know. Come here.
Inspector Grovening turns over the fallen body of the intruder. It's Alice.
It's a woman.
It's MacDonald.
You mean that she, MacDonald, and Evans are the same?
Of course. I told you. She smelled right and she sounded right. I should have thought of it long ago. But if two people go past you and you smell perfume and you're told that one is a man, you naturally think the perfume's on the other. I thought that till 3 minutes ago when I got hold of her slim wrist. She's dead?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Bob leads Phil to one side while the police gather up Alice's body. Phil and Jean sit in his apartment enjoying breakfast in the sunshine.
Oh, you want another cup of coffee?
No, thanks, Jean.
Phil, there's one thing I want to know.
What's that?
When you sent me away last night, did you know that Evans was going to come here?
I didn't know. I just thought maybe. The police were after a bunch of kidnappers, and I was after Evans, and Evans was after me, not knowing how much I knew or how soon I might figure it out. Can you imagine that? Afraid of me. Not of the police. Me.
And yet you sent me away.
I had to, honey. Don't you see? I just had to get Evans. I couldn't go after him, so I had to let him come to me. Don't you see?
Yes, but just the same, I think you should have at least...
What sort of a day is it out, Foggy?
No. It's clear now.
Well, take me out on the roof and show me. Come on. Can't you lend a guy a helping hand who can't even see?
Well, sure.
She leads him out onto the balcony by the hand, and they smile at the view.
Well, what do you see?
Well, it's just the same as you remember it.
He rests a hand on her shoulder and tenderly strokes her face. She gazes at him adoringly as he caresses her.
That's right. Just as I remember.
They kiss impulsively and lock their arms around each other, standing in the glow of the golden amber sky. The End. A CinemaScope picture. Produced and released by 20th Century Fox Film Corporation.